Music and Booze with Mo is co-produced and distributed by Nitty Grits, the media division of the National Food and Beverage Foundation, changing the world one taste at a time. Welcome to Music and Booze with Mo. I'm Mo Herms, and I've worked in the music industry most of my life, so have met some pretty amazing musicians over the years. I also love a good cocktail, and I've encountered some really interesting bartenders as well. It seems that there is a lot of crossover, so when I can, I like to talk to musicians and bartenders about music and booze. Join us at the bar, won't you? Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by The Mermaid, a cozy neighborhood bar with an aquatic flair in the Little Tokyo area of downtown LA. Open 7 days a week, featuring tropical cocktails and snacks, The Mermaid also has a daily happy hour from 5 to 8 p.m. Follow The Mermaid on Instagram at TheMermaidLA to hear about upcoming events and check them out at TheMermaidLA.com. Head to 428 East 2nd Street, Los Angeles, for a drink. Today I have the honor of sharing an interview with Christopher Day, a native Angeleno who is also a bar veteran in Los Angeles, several of the best bars in this town. I'll let him tell you about it as we go into the interview. But he was snatched away from Los Angeles to run a bar in San Francisco, the established The Barrel Room in the Financial District, where he has been creating a bar program to go with their spirits. It's been a wine place predominantly, but now they've got a fantastic spirits program thanks to Chris Day. So sit down and relax, learn about his classical piano training and dabbling in jazz as well, and all the chemistry that he knows too. We don't call him Doctor by Day for nothing. So here you go, Christopher Day. Well, I always start these things by having people introduce themselves, say, you know, who they are, and usually where they are, you know, where they're working.
Yeah.
So you've got a whole new thing to tell us about.
Yeah. So
the singing already.
You do what you can. I'm Chris Day. I am a native of Los Angeles, born and raised in the Valley. Without the accent. Between North Hollywood and Studio City. I went to school all over North Hollywood and basically just all North Hollywood. college at UC Santa Barbara, grad school at UCLA, and during grad school, I just kind of found myself absorbed by the cocktail world and soon just the hospitality industry at large, and yeah, my focus shift. And
so are you actually a doctor?
Everyone calls me doctor, yeah. Which is great. My handle is Doctor by Day, which actually one of my old high school friends gave to me originally.
They've been called doctor since you were high school?
I've been called Doctor by Day since college, since like early, like UC Santa Barbara.
And what were you studying when you were in grad school?
In grad school, I was studying organic chemistry.
Wow. Okay. So that is lent
materials,
itself.
Yeah, materials science. So yeah. I was doing a lot of like plastics and electronics. Not even pharmaceuticals.
I guess would be more handy for the cocktail realm, yeah.
Well, when you're in grad school, you drink a lot. And it just kind of fell hand in hand that I would eventually find myself going from really crappy dive bars to like really fancy bars. And I remember the day and the drink and the bartender that made my brain kind of like hit that switch.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and I don't think I've ever told anyone this, actually.
Yay!
It was
exclusive.
It was one, if not the first time that I ever went to the Varnish in downtown, and Eugene Shaw was there, and I asked him for a strong, stirred up whiskey drink, kind of like a Manhattan, and he made me a Diamondback, which is, you know, green chartreuse, bonded apple brandy, bonded rye whiskey, and that's basically it. Maybe a dash of bitters. And it was strong, and it was beautiful, and it was lovely. I'm like, and I was watching him make it, and I was just like, I had always kind of been enamored of the process and the technique that I always saw between any bar, but especially at the Varnish. And,
yeah.
And it's when it hit me. It's like, I want to do this. Like, everyone here is taking just as much time and appreciate, like, they have as much appreciation and skill mm-hmm. as I see in any lab, but they also get to talk to people, which is great. Mm-hmm. It's still low light. By the way, I think I'm getting a cold, so
don't worry about it. I will take all of the vitamins when I get home.
Oh, that's yucking, yeah.
Right? Was that the first time that you remember having chartreuse?
That might have been the first time I ever had it.
Because chartreuse is not terribly common unless you're sort of asking for it.
No.
You're asking for it, it's like you're getting a drink of a certain caliber, you know?
Yeah, most people get a last word as their introduction to green chartreuse. Mm-hmm. And I think technically a Diamondback should have yellow chartreuse. I've made it both ways. There's a Diamondback and a Diamondback Lounge, and I don't know which one is which, and I've never really had any clarification, but that happens all the time here. Doesn't matter. Either way, that was my introduction to green chartreuse, and after that, it kind of became kitty litter to me for a while. Most people have a last word as their introduction to chartreuse, mm-hmm. and that has like chartreuse and maraschino, which are two mm-hmm. completely polarizing things. Mm-hmm. So you either love them or you hate them.
I love them.
And
I love
yeah.
last word.
Yeah.
Well, now I'm wondering if I've ever had a Diamondback. Wait, Diamondback?
There's a Diamondback and a Diamondback Lounge. They both have the same exact thing, except one is
yellow
chartreuse and one is green. I like
both of the chartreuses.
One is knock you on your ass, and one is slower knock you on your ass. It's a lot more mellow, like it's a lot more subtle flavors in the yellow chartreuse one, but, yeah. You know, I mean...
So that's what turned you.
That was what turned me.
Did you finish grad school, or did you drop out of grad school?
So I was in the middle of writing my dissertation and doing the research for my actual approved dissertation.
Yeah.
Just still out there. No one's, you know, jumped in and done it. So ostensibly I could go back and finish, but no, I left with my master's.
Okay.
It's like their consolation prize for those that don't want to finish or don't finish, which is fine. But I'd much rather be called doctor by day than master by day. sounds a little dirty the other way.
It does sound a little dirty.
It's
kind of fun, dirty.
I guess.
But doctor is a little more sophisticated and can still be dirty if you want it to.
Yeah.
So let's roll with it.
And you know, Dre, Day, you know,
actually,
Oz.
When I see that, that's what I think too. I'm like Doctor by Day, and I do think Dre in there somewhere. But that's because we're SoCal kids.
Exactly.
That's why the Dre thing is strong with us. So, speaking of Dre, and I'm speaking of the music stuff, I think you mentioned to me too that you play piano.
I played piano since I was six.
Yeah? Did your mom make you play piano?
Well, my mom made me do a lot of boy things that she thought that boys needed to do. So by the time I was six, I had already gone through soccer and t-ball and basketball, and even tennis, and I was terrible at all of them. Like, I was just not a physically inclined little kid, and I was bullied all the time and made fun of because, you know, she also dressed me and I tucked all of my shirts in and I was a goof. Like, I looked like Eddie Haskell, essentially. And then finally she just said, well, let's try piano.
Yeah.
And it caught on with me. And it was basically like, the moment I found myself when I was like 10 years old at recitals, like sitting this short little white kid between all these teenage Korean girls. I'm like, oh, I might be good at this. Because I only practice 1 hour a day, and I went to like the same piano classes as some of these kids, and it was torture for them. Like it was like 5 hours a day they would practice, really? And I couldn't bring myself to it, which is probably why I don't do it anymore still. But yeah. I played piano until like college.
Oh, really? Did you ever play keyboards, like, with a band or anything like that? Or you just did it for yourself, mostly?
I mean, yeah, I think both.
I think both my... Guitar, ever?
Never. That was a realm I never approached, and I probably should have. But no, I...
Kind of nice.
Oh, yeah. I've always wanted to own a guitar.
It's, you know, it's not too late. Just
it's not.
Just throwing it out there.
And if Stuart Brawley's listening right now, I'll totally play her. Totally want to play your guitar. No, I started playing piano with the jazz band my freshman year of high school.
Oh, yeah?
Never had any experience like that whatsoever. I was very classically trained. I was taking, you know, theory lessons, very straightforward and analytical, and then all of a sudden I was told to go crazy, and it was horrifying. I remember, like, one of our first concerts in high school, we were up on stage, and we were playing, and all of a sudden, the band director pointed at me during the solo section and wanted me to solo out of nowhere, and I'd never soloed before.
So jazzy of him.
I was awful and terrible, but it was great, and it was nice, and I'm not mad at it.
What are some pieces that you remember really enjoying?
Well, in jazz band?
Well, you were playing classical at first, so...
Yeah, classical. I mean, one of the last pieces I ever learned to play, which was also my favorite... I mean, I learned The Tempest by Beethoven. That was, like, actually the last...
one of
the
last.
No.
No. I was going to say, that seems like it would be difficult.
No, I learned... there was a Toccata by Debussy. I think it was in C sharp minor? I'm not sure. It was a really interesting... beautiful piece, very technical. I'm really proud of myself for having memorized it. But it was after Debussy came back. I forget where it was from, but he heard the gamelan for the first time.
So he wanted to
embody the gamelan to the piano. And it was like an incredibly rich, harmonic, beautiful.
Wow.
And again, technically challenging piece. Yeah. And I really kind of want to relearn it because. It's the last piece I remember really enjoying playing. I enjoyed playing it and playing it for people. Both for myself and for people.
And for others. Yeah. So it's interesting to me because one of the
reasons... It's a good show-off piece.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure. One of the reasons... podcast was I found these musicians that were tending bar or owning bars, and there always seemed to be this sort of crossover and that kind of creativity.
Mm-hmm.
But what's interesting in just these few moments of talking to you is that you seem to kind of have like an analytical science brain.
Yeah.
But you've got the creative thing too, which that I don't stumble across as often.
Right.
So
and I feel like the creative part could have been focused on jazz because I never got... super into jazz, and I feel like
I missed jazz might have been too loose for you. I mean,
no, I mean, maybe.
Well, but then you create cocktails.
There's
because,
so
I mean,
many.
Just last night, you have like your greatest hits menu.
I know.
So you create things, and I guess that's a fine balance between measuring properly and creativity to get that balance.
Right. It's like with bartending, I can. Like with the same speed pours, I can definitely free pour. Mm-hmm. 2 ounces, 1.5 ounces every single time without looking. It's just like...
Because that's habit for you now.
Yeah, it's like one of those, like, when you read a cooking book, or cookbook, whichever, and when it says, you know...
A dash of.
Bake until golden brown versus bake at 350 degrees for 15 minutes, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, those are the different, like, that's the right and left brain style of making otherwise the same lovely thing. It's easier for people who are just in the know to hear that Baked Till Golden Brown thing because they feel it and they understand it.
Yeah.
Because if you give it to someone who is very analytical, but who can't feel as well, and there are, I mean, I played music with some people who were technically some of the most insane musicians I'd ever heard in my life. But while, like, their fingers moved and they played every single note perfectly, I never got into it. And they didn't seem into it. They looked like they were on a mission and they needed to finish that song and play it exactly the way it needed to be played.
Yeah.
But they didn't want to have fun with it.
Well, and that's... Was it a, they didn't want to have fun with it, or that's...
Maybe they were just taught that way.
It was kind of their demeanor, I would wonder, too.
Maybe, yeah. It was just very robotic, and it just, like, they'd had no joy to it, and I would much rather do something very simple with a lot of joy, I guess. And I still consider some bartending, like, all of my favorite drinks are the very simple ones.
Yeah.
But that's, like...
But you're someone who bartends at the Tiki Tea for your, or not Tiki Tea, at Tonga Hut for your birthday. Yeah. And Tiki drinks would be some of the most complicated ones.
I know, but at the same time, they're just so fun. And no one really can. Like, if you truly appreciate Tiki, then you understand it because there's a lot of complicated shit involved with it.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, the 90% of what Tiki culture is about escapism and the vibe and the feel that you get being there. So it's like, if you take it too seriously, you're kind of like,
you kind of
don't understand what's going on. And yes, there are like really like subpar, terrible tiki drinks.
Yeah.
And there are some of like fresh juice, everything perfectly balanced and perfectly measured out tiki drinks. But at the end of the day, 90% of it is just how you feel afterwards and what
so
the feel. And that's actually just a bar in general.
I was going to say, that would just be any drink, really.
It's any bar.
I mean,
any
there
bar
are more that, complicated drinks out there in the world. But the simple ones, like my favorite drink would, I fluctuate between a daiquiri and a margarita.
Yeah.
Because I love tequila. And, you know, a well-done daiquiri is just a perfect, beautiful, light, crisp thing.
Everyone is, I mean, a daiquiri is arguably the most perfect cocktail in the world because it's so simple and
if you do it right it's
perfect.
So perfectly balanced, it's just so lovely.
And if you look anywhere else, and this has been said in many places, a daiquiri is the bartender's French omelet test, where like you can measure a bartender's technique and ability by asking them to make a daiquiri because it's three ingredients and it literally is, again, 90% the bartender and not the drink and what's in it. Because there are measurements that you can look up online or whatever, but depending on the rum and the sugar and the bartender and the citrus and the ice and everything, there are so many nuances that aren't included in whatever ingredients that you can read.
Yeah.
It's all up to how much you know and how much you feel it and how experienced you are.
That's interesting. Well, how experienced you are for sure. But it's true. A good balanced daiquiri is a beautiful thing.
It is the perfect.
And I'm a tequila cocktail girl, so that's why the margarita is in there with me too.
There's nothing wrong with a margarita.
Oh. A properly done margarita.
I'm so thirsty.
Oh, as we sit here and we're surrounded by beautiful bottles.
Surrounded by booze. None of which
that we
to drink.
Can't have right
I
now.
Know.
So let's go back to the music thing. So
yes.
Then that kind of the classical music, to me, the analytical thing would be like the classical music thing almost to me, because classical versus jazz, because you were saying in the jazz world, you're kind of asked to be a little looser, I think, than the classical world.
Oh,
but in
of
classical
course.
World, there's a lot of passion, for sure.
There's a lot of passion, and your brain is moving a million miles an hour with classical as well, just in a completely different context than with jazz, which is immediate and in that moment. Whereas in classical music, like, it's very measured out, and you can take your time to figure things out. Like, you're not expected to make things up on the spot.
Yeah.
But again, it's... Jazz is kind of like being asked to make a daiquiri in a bar that isn't yours, with ingredients that aren't yours.
How do we apply these to drinks?
Yeah.
It seems like we can.
No, I'm fine with this. I taught organic chemistry to pre-meds who never wanted to learn anything about chemistry, so I had to make something palpable. I had to make it palpable to them.
Yes.
So I only used metaphor. So this is right up my alley.
Excellent.
But yeah, I mean... You need to take all of the analytical stuff that you have and funnel it immediately into something that is new and off the cuff and also, you know, an extension of you and your heart and your soul. And it took me a really long time to even get close to being able to metal out a solo because I was so reserved and scared in general.
In jazz or?
In jazz.
Jazz.
Mm-hmm. In solos, it was only jazz. Like,
yeah, I was gonna
you're
say,
not asked. There are very few classical pieces that they actually ask you to ad lib.
Yeah.
Thanks, Gershwin. who is arguably not classical,
he's
but still
jazz. I mean, he sounds a bit more classical, but actually, I would throw him into jazz.
Fun story, Gershwin. I think it was Ira Gershwin and Debussy, who was the last.
Yeah.
They had an affair. I don't know if an affair, but they were. We're in the same. They were about
they
the same.
They had some crossover time.
There was crossover time.
I had
totally.
No idea. I only just realized Debussy was being much older.
I thought Picasso was a lot older,
yeah,
but apparently
I guess that's true.
He and Miles Davis had like lunch one day in the Champs Elysees. But anyway, yeah.
Huh. I actually used to work for the Gershwin's publishing company.
Really?
For a very long time. Yeah. Oh, actually, they were with them for a very long time. I think they still are. So. I used to get to talk to like the grandsons and great grandsons and granddaughters who still managed, and they're based in San Francisco, actually.
That's awesome.
So yeah, maybe you can meet up with them.
Maybe I will once I'm up there.
It's a small town. It's a small town. So you're going to San Francisco for what? Let's tell everybody. By the time this airs, you'll be there. In
oh yeah, I'm going to be working at. Getting back to chemistry, I'm going to be working at my old grad school. Colleague.
Yeah.
She was also in grad school with me as an electrical engineer when I was in organic chemistry, but we lived in the same like grad student complex, so we got to know each other. She left to become a somm.
A sommelier. Okay.
She traveled to France and Italy, and now she owns three restaurants in the Bay Area.
Wow.
And when I went up to visit a couple weeks ago, she asked if I wanted a bar manage.
So you're going to go up to San Francisco and bar manage.
We're making full use of our degrees.
Nice.
So she runs an amazing wine program. She's part owner, along with the chef, who's another part owner. Mm-hmm. And they do regional stuff where they focus on a different part of the world every 4 months.
Oh, wow.
So their entire menu, both wine and food and now spirits and cocktails, switch out.
Every 4 months. And the name of
to
the place
reflect.
Where
it's called the Barrel Room.
The Barrel Room.
The Barrel Room, San Francisco, in the Financial District.
And do they currently have spirits there, or
yes.
is this going to come?
Yes,
okay.
It's been there for two years almost.
With the name of the Barrel Room, I just assume wine.
Exactly. But so. Yeah, obviously, I kind of want to start focusing on some aged spirits, both on the main floor and downstairs, which has a speakeasy built into an old vault, bank vault.
Wow. Cool.
Which has been done before, but this is really nice. And it's got, there's a lot of history in it.
I know it's been done before, but it's always
nice.
Love going
But I'm going to try to make this stick out a little bit more. Because of all the bank vault bars that I've heard of in L.A. and everywhere else, I haven't really heard of
any as cool as
any.
This one.
Well, None will be as cool as this one. None will be as cool as this one.
We'll rattle off some of the bars that you've worked at here while you've been in Los Angeles still.
Oh boy.
The stuff that gave you cred, that took you up there.
First and foremost, the first bar I ever actually was a bartender and had a shift as a bartender was at Bar Kitchen, now defunct. It's still there.
Bar Kitchen.
Bar Kitchen is on 8th. It's on 8th and Flower.
It
is the hotel bar at the O Hotel.
Okay.
It's right above Honeycutt. And it existed way before Honeycutt, but its proprietor is LLC. It was the first place I ever got a chance to actually bartend. Legitimately behind a bar, it's where I learned how to cut ice. It's where I learned how to make a perfect old fashioned.
It's not a bad place to start, actually, because I remember going there.
No, that I learned so much.
5 years ago?
So much about technique and just like how to function in hospitality.
Yeah.
And
That was your first
Alex,
job
Alex,
there?
And well, no, it wasn't my first job because I was in one of the first classes with Julian Cox.
Oh, okay.
Years before that.
Okay.
It's starting to get loud, isn't it?
It's all right. It's
okay, cool. So I started out with Julian Cox as one of, I think it might have been his second ever. Before saying, oh, I was in.
Yeah.
The Julian Cox class got an eye roll. This was when, I was in the same group with, Karen Grill, and you just missed John Kleinbart, with Dave Fernie, Bryn, Bryn Smith, who used to run Soto, which is also where I would bar back with her.
Oh, okay.
One of my first favorite places. Still probably my favorite restaurant in L.A. Yeah, God, who else? Tim Heller, Kate Gruttman.
A little group of superstars in there.
Yeah. Did I say Karen Grill already?
Yes, you did say
good.
Karen.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's now they're all over the place.
Yeah, totally.
And I'm going to San Francisco.
Well, that's all over the place too. It's wonderful. So you were at Bar Kitchen and...
Bar Kitchen. So I was also at Honeycutt because it was proprietors at that point. Mm-hmm. I was at Cole's. Cole's French Dip, the original bar, not the varnish behind.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where I had my first.
But I love that.
Where I had my first drink.
Too.
Oh yeah. I mean, that is one
these
of
are
like
all fantastic spots.
I know.
This is
I learned.
Really awesome.
That's the thing. I went everywhere that I could learn every single aspect of like cocktailing, essentially.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I learned. I went to places where I understood technique, where I understood, just hospitality in general, where I understood volume. Like I got to, I was able to just feed off of so many different aspects of hospitality in the industry, like whether it was with Julian Cox's programs mm-hmm. as a barback and just learning prep and being able to deal with
that just, stuff, yeah.
That was stress. or Honeycutt, which was both stress and volume and a lot of just very...
I would think the hospitality
very analytical.
Side would be...
There was a lot of analytics involved also mm-hmm. in Honeycutt. But yeah, it was...
So
it's,
I think I when I met aspect. You, yeah. I think you were doing General Lee's.
Was it?
Yeah, I think that's when I met you.
When I was bar managing there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or before I was a bar manager.
I thought you were bar managing there because you brought in Ian.
It was 2 years. Yeah, so I hired Ian there.
So you probably
and that's probably why. Okay, yeah.
He's a mutual friend, so I think I met you through Ian. So I
yes,
think you're
that would make sense.
Foraging there, but all the every other place that you mentioned, I went there too. So who knows if we had crossed paths during your times there?
I'm sure there were times.
Which is wonderful. So you did General Lee's and then opened up Tribute, RIP Tribute,
mm-hmm.
which was I thought a lovely, lovely bar. But
yeah.
The Valley's kind of tough on places like that. I think.
Well, it wasn't even the Valley because the Valley was doing well with us, but it's ownership.
Yes. Sometimes
when the owners don't understand what's going on,
yeah.
it's easy for, yeah. and they have the last word.
Yeah.
You're kind of at a loss.
Yeah. So now you're going to San Francisco.
And now
which
I'm going
is
to San Francisco.
Food and booze town, big time.
Has been, which is both a blessing and a curse because it's going to be very hard to, you know, make a noteworthy. It already stands out with the wine and food.
Yeah.
Because of Sarah,
yeah.
As far as the wine is concerned, mm-hmm. and Chef, like they've done a stellar job there, so I have a lot to live up to. So
well,
that's fun.
I think you can do it.
I have faith. So does Sarah.
That's why
she's yeah.
So yeah. You're relocating, going up there and doing this whole
It'll
thing.
Be fine. I'm happy about it. So
well, let's move it back to the music thing.
Yes.
Then. And maybe this is something you can. Well, you've been creating drinks for quite some time, and I know I've been to some of your back bar moments at Harvard and Stone as well, which is all the R&D stuff. So you had a drink last night that you were offering up called the Shut Up Wesley, which I was so sad to miss. and I'm a nerd too.
Yeah.
Remind me to tell you my Will Wheaton story later. But
done and done.
Yeah, it's very brief. But you know, there's fun and creativity in there. So have you done music drinks before? Have you thought any of those up? Because I always ask people, give me a pairing, give me some music and some drinks
oh,
that can
man.
Go together.
Oh, music and drinks together, yeah.
Well, that's what I like to ask people. But I wonder, since you've done so much R&D in your time, you know, if it's already happened. Because sometimes I ask this question and people are like, oh, yeah, actually, we did that this one time.
Yeah, I mean, I've definitely made drinks based on, like, certain artists mm-hmm. and, like, just what I imagine either their music or, compositions kind of, like, just eke out.
So it's very sounding analytical again.
It's very,
which I,
but
I
it's
love.
Very, it's very sin. But it is, it might be analytical, but it's also very synesthetic. Like I wouldn't expect someone to make connections that I would make. And again, it's like looking at a painting. Like everyone's going to interpret it differently. Just like sipping on a drink.
Totally.
Everyone's going to interpret a drink differently. Everyone's going to interpret a piece of music differently. Mm-hmm. So, when you do that, it's all very subjective. But it does tell you a lot about how someone looks at that or sees or hears it.
Yeah. So then what'd you do? Can you remember?
Oh, my God.
or what would you do?
Oh, well, it's my phone's off.
You've got it stashed in there.
I made a Harvard and Stone menu probably 20 minutes before we opened. That was actually, surprisingly, the shortest amount of time I've had. Normally they ask, normally I'm asked that day, like, hey, can you come and do R&D? And that's what most people actually hear. Mm-hmm. From them. Like, it's like, can you do R&D today? Coming
like,
in
oh,
5 hours. All right. So 20 minutes was all the time I had to plan for this. And I basically did like some of my favorite jazz musicians. I know there was a Herbie Hancock drink and a Freddie Hubbard drink.
That's rad. You can't remember what was in them, but you know
feel
you did
like,
that.
Oh, no. Was there a Kamasi Washington drink? Maybe.
Ooh.
Maybe.
Scroll through the Instagram, which if anyone wants to look Chris up on Instagram, it's at Dr. By Day.
At Dr. By Day. Fully spelled out, no spaces. Mm-hmm.
and then you too can scroll through his things and maybe see some of the menus and, that he has posted.
And
over
try
the
to
last
find what
years.
It is. Yeah, try to find what it is I'm looking for right now. I know it's
well,
on there.
Have you done any classical ones? Because you just list off a bunch of jazz ones.
Oddly enough.
That's kind of the looser, more improvisational kind of ideas.
Yeah, you know, I've never actually tried or thought to do a jazz-based...
Or a classical-based, you mean?
I mean, a classical-based menu, which is weird. You'd think I'd be able to do that.
Now that might be something to consider the next time you roll around.
I know, right? Oh, here it is.
Ooh, what do we have here?
So I had a Coltrane, a Simone, a Hancock, a Shorter, and then I just did a Childish Gambino.
I was going to say, is Gambino Childish Gambino?
It is Childish Gambino. And that's just the shot
whom
in the beer.
I adore.
Exactly. And there's right. Everyone
now I can look
appreciate
at this. What do we
that.
Have here?
But, yeah.
Coltrane is bourbon, bergamot, lemon, and soda. Oop, here, I'll just let you do this.
Yeah, bourbon, bergamot, lemon. It says bergamot because, again, this was written 20 minutes before. I had nothing to do it.
Well, maybe that's something
nothing
I'm
to do
just
with
not
it.
Familiar
so,
with.
So, yeah, so it was, you know.
Simone has vodka in it.
Simone, what it? It's kind of like a grassy, refreshing vodka gimlet.
Nice. Hancock is Jamaican rum.
Chinar and honey. Which is very much my steez. It's rich and brooding. Ooh. And, yeah.
I'm
complex,
into that shorter
but,
there.
Complex but simple.
Yeah.
Short, yeah. I mean,
I'm
shorter
an, is... Illegal. I love Illegal. Pamplemousse, Montenegro.
Yeah, like shorter solos. It's just like crazy and bright and all over the place. Yeah. And
so,
fun.
And so that was the
fun.
Drink. That was the party drink.
Yeah, so that was my ish. Yeah.
I love it. So maybe we'll do like, can you think maybe of a musical and drink pairing?
Ooh.
Is that too tricky for you? I'll ask people like when you're at home, if you're sipping on something, what are you listening
well,
to?
Well, let's think of Gershwin.
A lot of people just drink beer when they're at home anyway.
If you ask most bartenders like what they drink when they're at home,
beer.
They're drinking either beer or a shot of something. Like they don't want to make drinks for themselves.
Totally.
Like they'll sip on something or have beer or wine. And I'm the same.
Yeah.
Like I have a crap ton of booze at my own house, but I barely drink any of it because
most of the times come over.
I like to drink with people, and that's
me too.
You should share. I like to share those moments. Otherwise, I feel like you are. That is, I think, is one of like the crossovers
slope.
Between when you're doing it as a social drinker versus when you're an alcoholic.
Yeah.
I've definitely gone to places that I don't want to get with people.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like if you're going home and
just
aiming for a drink, that's weird.
Yeah, I have wonderful booze at my house that I only drink when people come over.
Yeah, and not
so
that
I'll
I don't
invite
drink.
People
yeah.
over. I'm like, hey, come over.
Exactly.
Let's make some drinks. Let's have a little social thing.
Exactly.
Right? So I get that. Yeah. So let's say you've got a couple people over. You were just saying Gershwin.
Exactly. I was going to say Gershwin. To me, Gershwin like just screams martini.
Oh,
so I
true.
Would want it. I would want to probably do a riff on a martini. And I always love doing riffs on classics because yeah. I feel like, you know, it's like the most complicated solo in jazz or the most complicated counterpoints and whatnot in, you know, Baroque music or what mm-hmm. whatnot. They're not always that interesting. I prefer something really elegant and simple. Mm-hmm. Like Count Basie could play one note over eight measures of a line of music mm-hmm. and it will be perfect, and I'll just like go, oh, and the same thing for like just a really beautiful, simple melody in a song that just like makes my heart melt. Uh-huh. Like that's kind of how I want to make the cocktails that I make. I want something with that last and are easy to make, yeah. but also like hit you in yeah. the gut level, like yeah. that you just want to keep having that, like you can really. Connect to. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I always start with things that connected with me, like an old fashioned or a martini or a Manhattan. My great grandmother would have a Manhattan every single night of her life.
Oh, really?
It's the first cocktail I ever had.
Was a Manhattan.
Was a Manhattan.
Did you have it with your grandmother?
With my great grandmother, actually.
Great-grandmother.
No. I never had
Did
a Manhattan.
Did you know your great grandmother?
I did know her.
Okay. I had a great grandmother that I knew as well.
I think.
Which is rare.
I think she passed away when I want to say 9, but it might have been 14.
I was 13 when my great-grandmother passed
away. I think it was 14.
I guess that means we're destined to stick around for a really long time unless we just keep abusing the livers. But we don't drink alone at home, so we should be fine.
Well, yeah. Slippery slope.
Well, we can probably wrap things up then with all that. There's so much there that's just wonderful stuff. And
yeah.
I always, if you want to pump yourself out, you know, pimp yourself out, pump what you do.
Wow. Well then.
Well, there's the find you on the Instagram, because I'm sure that
at Dr. By
Day.
By Day,
and mm-hmm. I'm sure in your new incarnation as the bar manager at Barrel Room.
At Barrel Room SF
in San Francisco. I'm sure people will be
also
seeing,
on Instagram.
They'll be seeing your drinks.
Yes.
Like all over here.
Yeah. And I'm gonna be working, I mean there's a great team of bartenders there already that I'm gonna be meeting and working with.
Yeah.
And so it's gonna be just like all the other programs that I've done, like I want it to be a really diplomatic and democratic process where everyone's like pooling their
I think a good bar, it has a great bar team, and then because of the music side, I think of them as being a band. And bands are like marriages. And,
bands
you know,
are families.
They are families.
Bands are families, and so are...
There's a very interesting relationship with creative minds in there. And if you have to respect each other and grow from each other, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah. And if you're in tune like that, then you
Wonderful
will continue to be successful.
Yep, totally.
Just any restaurant, bar, band, all those teams,
they
only function and really progress when they are...
Yeah,
when they're families, when they act like families,
mm-hmm. when they're a full-on operating unit,
and they're looking when you look out for each other, it always works out.
All right, so that's where they can find you, and then I'll toss out a piece of music that everybody needs to listen to.
Oh, jeez.
You can toss up a couple if you want, but we'll just do one right now.
So speaking of jazz and Gershwin,
you spoke so much of jazz and classical.
Everyone should listen to Gershwin's World by Herbie Hancock. Where he actually just plays.
Is it just like a medley almost of?
Yeah, he reinterprets and sometimes
just
neatly plays a bunch of Gershwin. It's his
ode too.
It's an amazing album. It's beautiful.
Awesome.
It's fun and it's beautiful. Probably one of my favorite songs.
Like ever.
At the moment, yeah. Well, no, there's a lot. You know, just listen to the books.
The books?
The books. It's very introspective.
The band, The Books?
The band is called The Books.
Oh, yeah, I'm familiar with the band, The Books.
Okay, so there you go.
Well, you
they're
just went
defunct.
All indie.
They're not.
I'm like, in this whole conversation, the
about
only,
jazz and classic?
The
and
only
classic?
Non-jazz classical is this, and
you'll
Childish
find,
Gambino.
You'll mm-hmm. find the, you know, there's...
There's a lot more to you.
They
right
all
now.
Take. They all take their... their craft and their inspiration from the classics. which is either classical music or jazz. Mm-hmm. So you can hear all of it there. I mean, also I'm a sucker for cello, so that's why I love the books.
Well, it sounds like you've really schooled yourself in the basics of all of these things, in music and also in cocktails, so that's why you're successful at what you do.
And I'm still learning.
You're being whisked away. Well, there's always going to be something
we're
to learn.
We're also learning.
I always tell people that when they're intimidated because I'm a music nerd, I'm like, listen, every time I talk to people, I learn something new. There's so much out there in the world to learn. I never shut myself down to it.
Word.
So thanks for educating us today.
No,
really
thank you
it.
So much for this.
Yay. I can't wait to visit you in San Francisco.
I can't wait for you to visit.
And that's that.
Such a lovely person, that Christopher Day. And if you are in San Francisco, please go visit him at the Barrel Room. You can find the Barrel Room on Instagram and Facebook. On Instagram, it's Barrel Room SF. And you can also find Chris there at Dr. By Day, completely spelled out, on Instagram as well. And of course, if you go to my website, where you probably downloaded this, or just go to my Facebook page, you can find Chris's really amazing playlist that he pulled together for us. You're going to feel so much smarter because you're learning from an actual doctor. Dr. By Day, anyway. So thanks so much, Chris Day. We miss you here in Los Angeles, and please visit this gentleman in San Francisco and have him make you a very delicious cocktail. Music and Booze with Mo is brought to you by Barkeeper, a head shop for cocktail lovers, located at 614 North Hoover Street in Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Stop by for barware, vintage glassware, a carefully curated collection of spirits, and one of the most impressive selections of bitters anywhere. Follow them on Instagram and Facebook for information regarding spirits tastings. That's barkeepersilverlake.com. And also in the Virgil Village neighborhood of Silver Lake, Los Angeles. Thanks for tuning in to our barroom chats on Music and Booze with Mo. For more info about today's guests and our Spotify playlist, check out my Facebook page, Mo Herms. Please subscribe to the podcast and feel free to tell all your friends about it. Lower your expectations and join us at the bar. Till next time, cheers. Cheers.